Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. Peter Rosenberger with us, the author of upcoming book in September, Hope for the Caregiver, Encouraging Words to Strengthen Your Spirit. And again, September, it's going to be out. Peter's president of Nashville, of the Nashville-based Standing with Hope. That's an outreach whose flagship program provides artificial limbs to people in West Africa. Host of a weekly radio program, he's also an accomplished public speaker, a writer, a spokesman for the needs of America's 65 million caregivers. Peter, hi, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Mike. I appreciate you guys, and I just want to echo what Anthony just said on your last caller. You know, you can't care for someone better than you can care for yourself. If you're not doing a good job caring for yourself, don't try to call yourself a caregiver. You won't make it.
No, absolutely.
And Anthony was exactly right.
No, you're spot on with that, because if you can't love yourself, you can't love someone else. If you can't take care of yourself, obviously, how are you going to do that? So it's called stand up first and then move forward.
I love it. I love it. Well, how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. How about you?
Oh, it's a beautiful day in Tennessee.
Oh, I've got a brother in Tennessee. I can't remember where he lives, but he's been in Tennessee for about 30 years now.
You don't know where your brother lives in Tennessee?
He's somewhere in Tennessee. I know he's out there. I'll call you at 4 o'clock in the morning when I remember. But he's there somewhere. It'll come before the show's over. I know it'll hit me. But by the way, when you're dealing with caregivers and some of the programs that you're in right now, let's talk about West Africa for a moment, artificial limbs to people in West Africa. What was it about that specific topic, that area of consideration, what caused you to move forward on that?
Well, we actually had several places we were looking at. This is something my wife had envisioned when she gave up both of her legs in the 90s. She had a horrific car wreck back in 1983 and held on to her legs for a long time. Finally, she had to let them go in the 90s. And the day that she walked for the first time as a double amputee, this is way back in the mid-90s, that afternoon, she happened to be laying in bed watching a documentary, watching television, and saw a documentary about Princess Diana helping landmine victims in Southeast Asia, and I'm sure you probably know about that. It
sure
was great work she was doing. Well, we thought about going over there. We looked at a lot of different places, Eastern Europe and so forth, and then we have friends of ours who are heavily involved in West Africa and said, come to Ghana, come to West Africa. We have a good network there that you could go into, because you can't, with prosthetics, we're not a first responder.
Sure.
By that, you're taking on that patient for life. And so you have to have a stable infrastructure. You have to have a stable government system. You have to have something there that you can work with the existing infrastructure. And so on their recommendation, we went over there and started addressing the needs of their patients. And then we have patients come from as far away as Nigeria. I just had a conference call this morning, and I've got a guy up in northern Ghana, about 10 hours away from where we work in Accra, and he's got some orphans, and he's bringing them down to our clinic because I'm sending a team over to West Africa next month, and he's got some orphans that he's going to bring down. And the way we do this is we teach and equip them to do this, and we do this as a Christian outreach for our Christian faith, mm-hmm. but we treat anybody regardless of what faith they are or no faith. It doesn't matter. As
sure.
long as they're an amputee, we want to help get them the service they need. And we train these guys to do this in West Africa with their Ministry of Health. So if I put a leg on somebody, Michael, he's going to walk. But if I teach somebody how to make legs, hundreds are going to walk.
Absolutely.
And then we share our faith with them to equip them to be standing with hope. And then they'll treat the patients there. We look over their shoulders now, for the most part, to instruct them and guide them in this process. We equip them with supplies, and then they charge a nominal fee for their labor. But if the patient can't afford it, then we'll sponsor that limb for that patient. Mostly those are children.
Now,
in this case, like these orphans, there's no way they're going to have those kind of resources.
Oh, no.
But
by the way,
my wife's policy was, don't put a leg on somebody that she's not willing to wear.
No, absolutely.
That was her policy.
And by the way, it was horrific what happened to your wife. There's no question about it. But what a gift that she paid forward with.
Well, she is, and she's still doing it. And
sure.
her life is very difficult, very hard, and that's what inspires my new book, the journey she's been on. But, Rocky Balboa said it great in the sixth Rocky, which, by the way, Michael, was surprisingly very good. And he said, life ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's
yeah.
going to bust you up and beat you down. And the question is not how hard you can hit, but how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And she has shown that over and over and over, that she can really take some brutal realities and not go into some kind of cave and just nurse her own wounds, but let's see if we can't make a difference in someone else.
Yeah, but and go to, you know, go forward. When I said pay forward with it, look at the lives that, quote unquote, that because of her got saved in West Africa, in all those areas. So in essence, again, horrible that it had to happen to her, but the gift that she gave to people from that happening to her.
Well, you can't stop horrible from happening, but you can stop doing good.
No, absolutely. No question about it. And when you really come down to it, I think if more of us thought this way, we'd probably have less and less problems in the world that we are dealing with today. And when we get to talk about the word caregiver, I think is, you know, it's misused. It doesn't give somebody the real full value of what a caregiver has to do when they get into that position. And not many people even care about caregivers. And these are the people who have to put their lives aside to help somebody else. And there are many cases when caregivers, not necessarily in the way that you're doing it here, but couldn't deal with what was going on, suicides, depression, and they needed caregivers. So there's that word in and of itself that's such a powerful word, and I think it's misunderstood.
Well, it is, and then there's the people that do this for a living, and then there's people like me who do this for a loved one, and we're volunteer doing it as volunteers, and just because we love them and they're our family, and this is our responsibility, and so forth. And I started thinking, you know, what does it look like to help somebody like that? What does it look like to help the person who's pushing the wheelchair? What does help look like? And you know, oftentimes, Michael will say to people, hey, you know, let me know if there's anything I can do. Well, you know, that's a little too vague. I think that we can get very specific on that. And that's what I wanted to address is how do you help somebody who is a high-functioning multitasker? How do you help them rest and be calm and stay focused and not pull their hair out? Let me tell you something. Taking care of somebody who suffers is a brutal reality. And you do it for a couple of days, and you can see the wears and tears on people. You do it for a couple of decades, and you've got to come up with a whole new way of living your life.
Well, absolutely, and it's completely different. I remember interviewing somebody who was a caregiver way back, and she was talking about, and it happened to have been her husband who had since passed away. But she said, you know, what you had to learn were things like this. You know, 1 minute you're in the bathroom with them and you're cleaning them up after they've gone, and 2 minutes later they want to make love. I mean, how do you make that transition? So I know.
Well, hopefully you do it in order.
Yeah, right. Not at the same time. But at the same time, this is one of the things that people don't look at for caregivers. You know, there's so many demands on them. So from your experience, major issues affecting caregivers today, what are we looking at?
Well, there's three things that I really focus on in my book and my radio show. The three, what I call the three I's. Caregivers deal with isolation, loss of independence, and loss of identity. Now, if you want to find out what that looks like, ask a caregiver, how are you doing? And watch them. They'll start saying, well, we just got home from the hospital, or he's doing okay, or she's doing such and such. They don't know how to speak in first-person singular. They'll go for third-person singular or third-person plural. First-person plural.
Sure.
And so that's a real indicator that they've become enmeshed in this person's life. They lose their identity in it. You know, when a codependent dies, somebody else's life flashes in front of their eyes.
Sure.
And that's exactly what happens with a caregiver. They lose themselves in this. And so I've made a point when I see them do this, I know because I've been guilty of it, I'll stop them and say, now, how are you doing? And that's when the tears come. That's when the stammering comes because they don't know how to express themselves and the pain that's in their heart. And so I really go after that. And then that isolation. Let me tell you something. You get so isolated because of logistics. Maybe the person you're taking care of is very difficult to go out in public with or because of whatever. Sometimes if it's CP, you got spasticity. If it's Alzheimer's, there's all kinds of things that do it. And they're homebound, and they don't have that connection with the community. You know, the first thing, by the way, I don't know if you ever read Milton, but the first thing that Milton said, the first thing that God's eye said that was not good was that man was alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's before the fruit from the tree. That's
sure.
The whole. That's just God saying, "Hey, wait a minute. This ain't good. That was not good that man's alone." And we realize that when you lose that sense of community, you become isolated, and you make terrible decisions because you don't have that flow of community around you to help bounce things off of to make good decisions. And then that independence. I mean, you are landlocked. Try taking, forget taking a vacation. Try just going to the movies.
Sure.
And so I focus on those three things, the three I's, and then I go deeper into the issues that caregivers struggle with their emotions, the fear, the obligation, the guilt. I call it, and that leads to heartache, anger, and turmoil. I say fog hat because I like 70s music.
Yeah.
But fear, obligation, guilt leads to heartache, anger, and turmoil, that fog. And they are truly operating in a fog sometimes. They don't know how to function. And those are the things that I just hammer on relentlessly to try to penetrate that, to give some tangible help of how do you deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I love my work, and I love being able to engage with these folks and grab them a lot by the lapels and let them know that I see them and that they are seen and what they're doing has value, and they are very, very special people for doing this.
Peter, you can sum it up with what you just said about they lose themselves, they lose their identity. You go through life, and it doesn't matter how old you are, you have something to fall back on. You have this who you think you are, whatever that is. And when that's gone, most people get completely and totally lost because they don't know how to reach out. They don't know how to express because they're not who they were before this started. And to get them to get back on their feet again is a very hard thing. And you mentioned guilt. Guilt is, you know, I'm not supposed to, you know, I shouldn't say this, I shouldn't do this. And we do it to ourselves. And you run through this process, and pretty soon you're worse than the person, you're in a worse place than the person who you're giving the caregiving to.
Well, there's no problem so bad, Michael, that you can't make it worse with guilt.
Sure. No, love it. By the way, Bristol, Tennessee, I just remembered.
Bristol, well, that's way up there in the northeast part of the state. My wife is from that area. She is a ninth generation Tennessean.
Ah, okay.
I tell people don't let the fact that she's got all her teeth fool you. She's a hillbilly.
I love it. When you really come down to it. And by the way, ninth generation Tennessee, being a hillbilly, that's family. There is a culture there that you don't break into. And I think, well, that's one of the things that we've lost somewhat in this country. And I also believe that what you're doing and what you're saying is something that could, if you could take it to the White House, if you could take it to the government, both sides of the aisle, it doesn't matter, and start out with some of the processes that you're talking about here, because who you're talking about is almost every citizen in this country where there's confusion and there's loss of identity.
Well, there is. And another thing that I've found, that the basic principles for caregivers work pretty much all the way up to foreign policy. I call it the Delta Doctrine. I was flying out of Atlanta one day on Delta because, you know, duh, everything leaves through Atlanta.
Sure.
And the flight attendant, I noticed, was giving the absolute perfect advice every time for caregivers. Don't try to help someone else until you put your mask on first. In the case of, you know, emergency, these masks are going to fall down. Put yours on first before helping someone else. And I realized, man, you know, they're not telling us how to open the peanuts. They're not telling us how to, which are, by the way, surprisingly hard to open sometimes. They're not telling us how to deal with that atomic suction device called a lavatory. But they are reminding us every time to put our mask on first because they know it's counterintuitive. And it's very difficult to help someone if you're gasping for air.
Sure.
And I thought, that's foreign policy. How in the world can we help other people if we're gasping for air, if we're in $17 trillion worth of debt? And, you know, I don't look to Congress or the White House or anybody in Washington because they obviously don't know math.
No.
And so, you know, you can't help people if you're gasping for air.
But the point of contention is you...
What does it look like to put that mask on? That's what I talk about. That's what I spend a lot of time with. What does it look like to put that mask on?
Yeah, but Peter, the basic contention here is that everything that you're saying is rules to live by. Whether you're in government, whether you're an individual, whether you're a business, whether you're a caregiver, it's all the same thing. In one way, shape, or form, we are all caregivers. And we don't look at it that way, but that's really what it comes down to. So it's taking a look at the process, the strategies that you're creating here, and you can see it in so many different areas.
Well, and when it comes to actually taking care of an acute loved one, I mean, that's going through this suffering of some kind, if you love somebody, you're going to be a caregiver. If
Sure.
you live long enough, you're going to need one. And that's the reality for us. And right now, with 65 million Americans are dealing with this, we got in Tennessee alone, Michael, we got over 100,000 cases of Alzheimer's just in Tennessee, and 400,000 caregivers for those patients. Well, that's just one disease, one issue, and that's how many people are dealing with this, that one issue. Now, you factor in cerebral palsy, you factor in traumatic brain injuries, you factor in all kinds of other things, amputation in my wife's case, and all the stuff she's had with her wreck, quadriplegia with my friend Johnny Erickson, and I mean, just name it, and then you got just aging population. And if we don't learn these principles now, we're going to be in a world of hurt. This may sound really corny, but I tell people, hey, look, don't even call yourself a caregiver if you don't have life insurance.
Yeah, not a joke.
Because you are the sole. In my wife's case, for example, if something happens to me, man, she's in a world of hurt.
Sure.
If I don't have life insurance. We got 72% of caregivers in this country today. Out of that 65 million, 40-plus million don't even see their own doctor regularly.
No. No, by the way,
that's a time bomb.
Yeah, Peter, we're starting to run out of time, but there's something very important I want to touch on. When you mentioned Alzheimer's, and the one thing we didn't get to talk about, and I'd love to have you come back, because it's, you know, a caregiver faced with somebody, a loved one who's consistently acting bad. I learned something about, I guess it was about within the last 6 months to a year, and it had to do with Alzheimer's. Radio Susie, her mom has it, and she goes through this all the time. You know, the point of where she comes in, she gets yelled at, she gets spit at. They don't even know who, you know, their sons or daughters are. One thing that I did learn, which was fascinating, and I didn't get this before, in Alzheimer's, what they found out is there's time lapses. So in essence, you could be sitting there talking to a mom, a dad, a loved one, and they're living 60 years ago, which is what's going on in their mind. They may not know who you are, and they may be going through things in their mind at that point that doesn't have anything to do with the reality of what's going on today. So one of those things for people to watch for, if you are a caregiver and your loved one does have Alzheimer's, the responses that you get may not be coming from today. They could come from 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Well, listen, let me give this to your listeners.
Sure.
They're not doing it to you. They're just doing it.
Yes.
You can't take it personally. They're not doing it to you. They're just doing it.
I was just applauding
you. And by the way, we got my publisher is offering a free exclusive preview. If you go to my website, standingwithhope.com, all one word, standingwithhope.com, you can download the book before it hits the bookstores in September. Right now, it's free. You can go and take a look at it. And I just want to put it in their hands. I really appreciate my publisher doing that. So I'd like to offer that to your listeners. Go out there today.
Wonderful. And by the way, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time. And
happy to do it.
Okay. Take care. And we'd love to have you back.
Love to. Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye. Oh, the shark baby has such